So the talk tonight is called More Mindfulness, Less Stress, Better Health. And it's really focused on a ton of scientific research that has been done over the last 40 years on how much meditation can benefit our bodies. So it seems intuitive that we meditate to benefit our hearts and our minds, that as we let go more and we're more present, we taste greater ease, less anxiety, more joy, hopefully. In a very crooked path, it isn't a straight shot. So that's pretty intuitive. And it's probably pretty intuitive that meditation would help our bodies in the sense of relaxing. And that as we stress less in our minds, that our bodies are going to be more relaxed. And so the very first research around meditation is involved with the physical effects of relaxing. So Herbert Benson's had this famous book in the 70s kind of kicking off mind-body research called The Relaxation Response, a doctor at Harvard. And so he just measured all the ways in which people who meditate have lower blood pressure, have lower pulse, have lower breathing rate, have less tension in their muscles, and so forth. So that's kind of the early research, and that's sort of intuitive that we would our mindfulness practice would help us just be more relaxed and help our body relax. And since then, a lot of research has gone on to show all kinds of very surprising effects of mindfulness on our health. And so I want to cover that. So Alan Langer, a professor of psychology at Harvard University, one of the main researchers on mindfulness and health, says that more than 40 years of research have made More than 40 years of research has made clear that whether you are mindless or mindful makes a big difference in every aspect of your health and well-being. Pretty obvious. But there's a lot of not so obvious stuff. So research is showing meditation helping in all kinds of ways with our physical health. One very recent study is showing that mindfulness may be some kind of preventative against Alzheimer's. And so while it might be intuitive that, you know, that meditating, focusing, being present, letting go of distraction would make our minds sharper and able to concentrate more. You know, it might not be intuitive that that would have significant effects for the longevity of your cognitive abilities, and that it might actually prevent Alzheimer's. So in 2006, a team of psychologists demonstrated that the neural activation pattern of older adults, especially in the prefrontal cortex, front of the brain, which is the most human part of the brain. Activation patterns of older adults began to resemble those of much younger people after just 5 one-hour training sessions on a task of attentional control. And their brains, in addition to becoming more efficient at focusing just from 5 hours of attention practice, also became more efficient in multitasking. And then the same, a different study in Ohio State showed that older adults who scored higher on mindfulness scales had increased connectivity in their default network. And the default network, don't ask me to explain that, I can't, but it's basically the brain in its resting state. So mindfulness is actually increasing the strength of the resting state. Again, intuitive. But this increased connectivity is a very good thing. And in the precise areas where this connectivity is increasing are the same areas that are known to be the brain sites of Alzheimer's. So it's not proof, but it's just kind of tantalizing suggestion that there can be some kind of preventative effect against Alzheimer's with our mindfulness practice. So if you feel a little bit of biodegrading of your brain, then, you know, it's possible that mindfulness could slow that down. So I think another surprising study shows that people who've been, this is with TM meditation, people who've been practicing a fair bit of TM meditation were 12 years younger physically than their chronological age, as measured by lower blood pressure, better vision, and better hearing. And people, this is for people who've meditated a lot. People who haven't meditated as much were 5 years younger in these measures of chronological age. So lots of surprising findings around meditation and health. And I want to focus on a whole set of findings that really has to do with stress and the way that stress affects our health. So I'm just going to list a whole range of conditions that mindfulness helps with. And this is all because of the ability of mindfulness to reduce our stress. So mindfulness helps with any of the effects that come from chronic insomnia. We cut stress and our sleep patterns get better. The whole host of things, you know, just being more exhausted, being more susceptible to negative emotions, all the things that come with not getting enough sleep. So that's just a huge arena. Mindfulness through cutting stress helps with heart conditions like heart arrhythmia or the deposition of plaque in the arteries that lead to cholesterol. Mindfulness by cutting stress reduces chronic pain conditions such as chronic headaches or back pain or tinnitus, the ringing in the ears. Mindfulness helps with inflammatory conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, irritable bowel syndrome, asthma. This is all documented. I'm not just, you know, saying some, you know, good to hear stuff. This is everything I'm saying has scientific studies behind it. Mindfulness by decreasing stress helps with respiratory issues such as asthma, with skin conditions such as hives, possibly could help with type 2 diabetes because stress is a big impact on type 2 diabetes. Mindfulness helps with digestive tract issues such as ulcers, heartburn, again, irritable bowel syndrome, intestinal cramps, constipation. It helps because stress depresses our immune system. When we have less stress, our immune system is stronger, and that helps with a whole host of immune diseases, from getting colds a lot, all the way up to being HIV positive. There are studies showing that mindfulness really helps reduce symptoms of being HIV positive by strengthening the immune system. So all of this is coming simply from stressing you. Just want to give you a little more specifics on one example. Back pain is a big issue. And generally, you know, back pain is seen as a structural problem. There's something wrong with our structure. But there's a lot of evidence now showing that that's not really the case. For instance, in studies show that job dissatisfaction predicts back pain better than the physical demands of a job. So whether you're digging ditches or, you know, driving a desk, whether you like your job or not is a much better predictor of back pain. chronic back pain is basically a modern industrialized condition. You don't see it that often, nearly as often in less developed countries, where actually there's probably a lot more manual labor. And apparently, according to one doctor, most people who come in with back pain issues have no structural problem at all. And even if they do have a structural problem and they have surgery to replace the structure, to fix the structural problem, back pain often persists. So all of this is pointing to something else. And the something else is muscle tension, that our backs hurt primarily because of the tense muscle. And muscle tension is caused mostly by stress, not only, but a lot by stress. So the more we relax mentally, the more we relax chronic muscle tension. So that's just one example. So the importance of how much mindfulness can impact our health is just shown by something like 75 to 90% of all doctor visits are for stress-related problems. All of the things I just mentioned. Costing something like $300 billion a year, all of our stress-related issues. So just going to go with this and talk about stress, talk about how mindfulness reduces stress, and then go into a little bit more specific of some of the surprising studies around the health benefits. So when we think about stress, what do you think about? What's stressful? So if it's out of our control, that can be pretty stressful. Stressful. It has people really young, vulnerable, depending on the thing, right? Thoughts can be stressful. So those are outer stressors, and that's an inner stressor. Okay. So again, internal stressor, not really knowing like what's going on with a particular thought pattern, where that's coming from.
Change.
What did you say after change?
Such as a move.
Such as the, yes. Right. Very stressful, often. Doesn't have to be. Sometimes it can be exciting, right? Illness. Uh-huh. How about the illness of a loved one? Raising teenagers. Say it again. The neighbor's loud wind chime.
Uh-huh.
Time pressure. That's a big one. Uh-huh. Monetary. Financial. Anyone have any financial stress? I got a credit card offer in the mail. It was pre-declined. I bought a toaster oven. They gave me a free bank. Loss. Mm-hmm. So stressors are not stress. Stress is our reaction to stressors. Things that are stressful for one person are not for another person. things that are stressful for us on a bad day are not on a good day. So the stressor is not really the issue. The issue is our response, whether it's an internal stressor like thoughts or an outer stressor like financial challenge. So stress is really more our internal response to events. And so that's the way I'll talk about it. So this is here's a technical definition, and excuse the medical language. This is Richard Lazarus, a UCal Berkeley stress researcher. Says that stress is a particular relationship between the person and the environment that is appraised by the person as taxing or exceeding his or her resources or endangering his or her well-being. So something that's threatening, or something you don't like, or something that exceeds your resources. The truck you just bought exceeds your financial resources. So anything is negative or threatening or problematic. And it's in the perception. He says it's a relationship between the person and the environment, whether it's inner or outer environment. A lot of stress is how we perceive. And then a lot of stress depends on our resources. If we feel resourced, if we're doing financially well, if we have a good social life, if we feel like our romantic life is going well, you know, if we feel resourced, we just don't get stressed out as much. So there's a lot we can do preventatively to work with stress before it ever happens. And so that's where something like mindfulness is a huge thing. We can preventatively be resourced so that we're not trying to learn how to swim as the Titanic is sinking. It's much better to learn how to swim already know how to do that. So just remember, a key component of stress is how we receive something, and how we receive something is really a reflection of how we're perceiving it. And I'll come back to that. So, just a handout here. Don't mind passing this around. So there's all kinds of levels of stress. The strongest level of stress is when something happens and we are activated into a fight-flight response. So I just want to lay the foundation a little bit for what happens to our body in a stress reaction, because that's going to really be very pertinent to how mindfulness helps the body by cutting the stress. So if you look... I don't have it. End up. You looking like that? So if you turn to the side that has the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems, so lots of different nervous systems in the body. The one that really relates to stress is the autonomic nervous system, and this is just pretty much what's controlling our breath rate, our heartbeat, feelings of thirst, hunger, etc. You know, they're really just sort of basic body activities. And there's two basic divisions of this. This is simplistic, but we'll just go with it. There's a sympathetic and parasympathetic. How many of you know this already? About half. So the parasympathetic can be summarized as rest and digest. You can see here as you look down, when the parasympathetic nervous system is activated, our heartbeat's slower, our bronchi are constricted, peristalsis and stomach acids are secreted, so we digest and we're resting. And it's actually kind of our default state is to have a more activated parasympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic nervous system is, its strongest is fight or flight, but it's basically activating our energy, mobilizing our energy for action. And we're not typically in a sympathetically aroused state. It's when it's time for action, our sympathetic state gets aroused. And a lot of things happen. It's basically when we're really feeling under threat is when sympathetic is most activated. And so when that happens, we need our senses to be really alert. So for instance, our pupils dilate. The hair on our body goes up so that we can be more sensitive to tactile experiences. There's no point in digesting your food if you're about to be attacked by a tiger. You're going to need energy to be shunted away from digestion and towards the large muscles in your arms and legs. So this sympathetic nervous system is very helpful when we're being physically threatened, because our senses are sharp, our muscles are going to be, you know, at their best. And then we've all heard these stories of the superhuman things where, you know, a kid is trapped under a car and you know, someone comes along and lifts the car up and you know, the kid is saved. Well, that's all massive sympathetic activation. It can make us incredibly strong. And then you need a lot of rest and digest after that. So our basic default is activated parasympathetic with activated sympathetic at times of need. So in thinking about stress, there's little stresses or quick stresses that happen and come and go. And stress is a part of life. It'll always happen. There will never not be stress. Things are always changing, you know, and unpleasant things happening, it's just not going to go away. Stress is a part of life. But when the stress is over, then we can go out of sympathetic activation and back to parasympathetic, where we're more relaxed, and we can go back to digesting our food and just having a much more relaxed state. And chronic stress is when we have lots of stress reactions to whatever's going on in our life. And we're sort of in a state of hyperarousal or chronic arousal where the sympathetic in us is really on a lot. And so we feel either hyper alert or anxious or easily startled or, you know, hypervigilant, sort of always looking for what's wrong. And this has a big toll on our bodies over time. Acute stress doesn't seem to, it's just what our bodies are built for. Chronic stress is really where we start to get health problems. Now, when is the last time you were chased by a lion across the plains? When is the last time you felt yourself stalked? You know, I mean, we used to have massive predators here in America. You know, 10,000 years ago, the American cheetah, the short-faced bear, which is a bear as tall as a horse, could run faster than a horse. I mean, you know, but those have been extinct a long time. And in a way, for most of us, the biggest stressors we have, what causes us the most stress, is other people, social situations. And we can get, when there's a kitten that walked into the room, or a little bit of a challenge, our body can turn that into a tiger or a lion, that we can have really big fight-flight stress responses just because, you know, someone looked at us the wrong way or, you know, just didn't acknowledge us when we wanted to be acknowledged. We can really go into stress responses and even fight-flight responses just around social flights. So we have a body that's built, you know, to be on the savannah. And, you know, in some ways, the fight-flight is super helpful if a tiger's chasing you, right? You don't want to sit around thinking about, huh, what kind of tiger is that? Huh, I didn't realize, you know, oh, is it a juvenile or is it a... You're dead, right? So, you know, apparently we evolved so that we have this ability to actually stay in our fight-flight response, not think any complicated thoughts, and either fight or run. And that's really helpful when we're being chased by tigers. But, you know, when someone didn't quite speak to us in the tone we're wanting, and we go into a big stress response, that's just, you know, a lot of extra suffering. Have you ever been stressed by this comment? Coming to full on fight flight? Honey, we need to talk. So, sometimes a stress response is very helpful. A lot of times it's a big overreaction. And so, that's basically an overview of stress, and then I'm going to talk about really how mindfulness helps us reduce all of this. And then I'll talk about how that's been scientifically shown to help our bodies. So let me just stop there and just invite any comments, input of any kind. So just to repeat the comments for the mic. How might technology, I'll just do a very simplified, how might technology sort of be affecting our stress levels because we're, you know, bumping along and in some ways not getting, I mean, this is just my extrapolation of what you said, but in many ways we don't get breaks, you know, extended breaks from stressful things. I mean, I forget what the number is, but for a lot of people now, the last and first things we do every day is check our email. And, you know, unless you've done a good job of really making your personal and your work email separate, which, I mean, how many of us do that? We can get a lot of stress, you know, just from that. And then when it's in the palm of your hand, we can get it all day long. If we're not really vigilant and careful to be monitoring how we're using our technology, we can be in stress states all day long and not getting simple, just simple time in nature or simple time with people or simple time with our kids. So I haven't really read a lot of the research on them, but I mean, we are definitely retraining our brains. We're always practicing. Meditation is a intentional practice, and we get better at meditating over time. Well, surfing the web, and the minute you have the slightest discomfort, and then clicking on a new window, and then clicking on a new window, is another practice. It's practice. We're changing our brains when we do that. And we're, you know, it's a big experiment. But, you know, I don't know if studies on it, but and please comment on this if you wish, but my personal experience is we're under a lot more stress because of how we're using it. Yes. So the comment is just, you're surfing the web. Here you are. How did you get here?
What was I doing?
Why am I here? And it's kind of addictive and not always very satisfying. I mean, to me, it's a little bit like Cheetos or Doritos or something. Super spicy, enticing, alluring. And, you know, and then we have that response, like, how did I get halfway through this bag of chips? And like, oh, God. Sometimes the internet's like that, right? It's a really different, I mean, we have endless desire gratification now because of the internet, which is really good. I mean, there's so many good things about it. And yet, it's also throwing up a lot of challenges. You mean that there's past trauma that's landing on? Yeah, so the comment is kind of the relationship between trauma and stress if you've had stress in the past, then something that happens for a person with trauma is going to be a lot more stressful than something without. Definitely.
So
road rage is not about the jerk in front of us, it's about us. And we can change our perception, and the jerk becomes whatever, something else. So, exactly. And this is very hopeful, because our stress response is internally created, and because of that, we can change it. And we can go from a stress reaction to a response, you know, which is really different. Yeah, so these a reframe where we can take a challenge, you know, and somehow hold it in a different way just can take away the stress. And the Buddha talked about two arrows, you know, someone's shot with an arrow, but before the arrow gets pulled out, they need to know, like, you know, what the shaft of the wood is made of and what the arrowhead is made of and who shot them and what clan did the person belong to and how old, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, that's just a whole secondary level of suffering. And it doesn't help us deal with the first arrow. So we can, the arrows come. our practice is not about getting rid of the first arrows, but it's the second and third and fourth, where we can actually deal with challenges without stress. We can have unpleasant experiences and zero stress, because we can take out second, third, and fourth arrows. And a lot of the last class that I read was about pain and how much our perception of pain has to do with our resistance to pain. When we cut the resistance to pain, we cut the stress around pain. We can have pain and no stress. And so I'm really happy for you that you discovered that. Yeah, and that's exactly the stress about it just makes it so much worse. It is what it is. You know, there's a whole meditation technique called the sound of silence. And you might look this up on, you know, Google it or something. A Thai teacher, Ajahn Sumedho, he's a Westerner, but he's in the Thai forest tradition, has a practice called the sound of silence. And the main thing he's mindful of is the ringing in his ears. He doesn't have pity because he's not strong, but your sound's mild. So, you know, you could even, it's a very steady object of attention. So, if you're curious, look that up. Catching the very beginning of this half breath, in or out, continuing to know what's happening in the belly until the end, noticing if there's a gap, and then this half breath, very beginning, duration and end. And as you do this, just relaxing. The very rhythm of nature is inside of us. Just like waves crashing and receding on the beach, our breath moves in and out without fail in this life. Just relax, just like you're at the beach. As the rise and fall of the breath does this work. Okay, so when you fully connect with the breath, with the rhythm of nature inside of you, where's the stress? all stress is past and future. And all stress is created by our thoughts. We can have pain, but pain is not the same thing as stress. Stress is our thoughts about the pain. Past and future exist only as thoughts. If you think about it, where is yesterday? It's as gone as 2,000 years ago. And where is tomorrow? It's as gone as 2,000 years from now. They just don't exist. They only exist in our thought worlds. And all of our stress comes out of these thought worlds. So mindfulness, the way mindfulness deals with stress, is to simply be the absence of stress. When we're really connected with the present moment, there's no stress. Even in an unpleasant experience. When we do this practice over and over, we learn the wisdom of letting go. And as the story goes, and some of you will know this, but for those of you who don't, Jack Greenfield and Abram Chah, this very, very wise Thai teacher of the 20th century, when Jack was first a monk in the 60s, were walking along, and there's this big boulder in the woods, and Abram Chah says to Jack, "You see that boulder?" "Uh-huh." Jack said, "Is it heavy?" Jack said, "Well, of course it's heavy." And Abram Chah said, "Well, not if you don't pick it up." So, past and future are very heavy. And yet, we don't have to pick them up. We can actually, it's hard to do because we've trained so much in past and future. But we can let go by being mindful and being present. And then we don't have to pick up the boulders, at least for that half breath. Maybe one will come on the next half breath. When we do this more, and this is the wisdom of letting go, in the let go heart, we only deal with what has to be dealt with. The rest, we just let it lie there big and heavy in the woods without picking it up. And then when it's time to deal with something, we deal with it. As we do this practice more and more, we let go, we taste natural peace. It's just there if we're not arguing against reality. If we're struggling against what is, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, we're going to suffer. If we accept what is by connecting with it mindfully, then we drop out of stress and we taste this natural peace that's already there inside of us. So mindfulness has everything to do with stressing less. Again, as in the Q&A we were talking about, it's these other arrows that are the stress. We have difficulty, and we turn it into difficulty by stressing about it. And then we turn it, because now you've heard this talk, then you stress about the stress, and that's the third arrow. Oh my God, I shouldn't be stressing. This is really bad for my body. Don't stress. And then we add that level of stress. No problem. If you can't wake up to the first arrow, wake up to the second. If you can't wake up to the second, wake up to the third. You can wake up here right now. If you walk into a dark room and turn the lights on, doesn't matter how long the room's been dark, it's bright. You can wake up any time and just be with what is, even if you're stressing. If you're stressing, the way to cut stress about stress is to just notice what stress is like. Now, and I haven't seen studies on this, but I would be absolutely convinced that there would be no physical harm to really be mindful of yourself in a stress response. Because you're actually cutting the stress of stress. And you're actually just being with your experience. And when you're with that experience, you're just in Buddha mind, in wise mind. As you relate with interest to what's happening, you've at least cut the third arrow. And we can sit here and notice tingle, tingle, tingle when we're anxious. And it doesn't go anywhere. It's actually deactivating our stress to open to it mindfully. So as we're mindful, we reduce our stress by being stressless, whatever the opposite of stress is. We actually just be not stressed. So we're just more in this peaceful heart as we meditate more. And we're basically dropping the argument with reality. So that's another way we just stop with the stress. We just let unpleasant be unpleasant. We let the pleasant be pleasant. And just enjoy it while it lasts. So as we're mindful more, we stress less also because we start seeing reality more clearly. And we start seeing that actually change is happening all the time. In every situation. Our bodies are changing, our minds are changing, our emotions are changing. Our partners are changing, the weather's changing. It's all changing. And change, which is usually the biggest source of stress, stops being stressful. It's because we're like, well, it's the law. Everything changes. And the more we really internalize that insight that everything changes, the less we stress. And what's really amazing is the more mindful we are, the more we see that change helps us let go. And the more we let go, the more peaceful we are. We actually start to see change as a positive on the spiritual path. And so then we don't stress when change happens. We're just like, oh, yep, it's the law. Everything changes. So we really change our perception of things. Remember, a lot of stress is our perception of it. So when our thoughts get more aligned with reality, we don't get upset. Our expectations don't get upset so easily. We just are aligned and we don't stress. So these are all ways that mindfulness really help us let go of stress. And then it also really helps us to just focus on what we can do, and then let go of everything else. The more we practice, the more we do that. This question helps all the time. Oh, is there anything I can do, you know, about a problem? Oh, yeah, there is. Okay. Am I willing to do that thing? Oh, yeah, I am. Okay, so do it. Oh, actually, I'm not. Okay, so don't do it. And if you have a problem, and there's nothing you're willing to do about it, then you don't really have a problem. Just what it is. So we learn this more and more and more. Is there anything I'm willing to do? If not, no problem. Even when it's a problem. So this all helps us experience less stress. Mindfulness also helps us release stress when we're stressed. And in the handout, if you go back to this parasympathetic, sympathetic. Actually, it might not be on here. Yeah, it's not on there. So the part that controls... The part of our brain that controls the autonomic nervous system is the reptilian brain. And this is where fight flight lives. And the reptilian brain does not respond very well to thought and image. That's more like prefrontal cortex. The reptilian brain is in touch with the body. It's wired into the body. Remember, hunger, thirst, heartbeat, breath. It's all about the body. And the way we release stress is to notice what the body is like. And this is helping our reptilian brain. You can say, yeah, that stress is over. You know, what's done is done, right? That's all frontal cortex. That helps that part of us. But the reptilian brain needs to feel the body sensations releasing. And so our mindfulness practice is working so often with mindfulness of body because it's what helps us let go of stress. When the reptilian brain can really notice that, oh, the flutter in my belly and anxiety, it's just fluttering away. And actually there's calmness around it, right? When you're in flutter in fear, it's only the belly fluttering. The back, the legs generally are fine. So we want to notice that, the parts of us that are fine. And then we want to notice where the tingle is. And then the reptilian brain starts getting it. Oh, there's a lot of calmness. And then the flutter starts to diminish. And then when the flutter goes, we really release stress. We for that time anyway. You know, it's not just the frontal cortex that knows this. Our brain stem knows this. Our reptilian brain. So when we are stressed, all we have to do is turn towards the body and be aware of the sensations. Not our ideas about it. We have to feel the sensations. Buzz, pulse, flutter, tingle, warm, cool, all of that. Because that's going to help our reptilian brain, where the stress is being held, let go of the stress. Okay. That's my really mindfulness speech so far. This is how we let go of stress and how we experience less stress. If you want to stress less, meditate more. Period. So now to just look at some of the research that we would expect this to all translate. If actually mindfulness does reduce stress, it should help us with all these conditions in our body that are stress caused or stress related. So lots of studies showing that mindfulness does in fact reduce stress. I'll just quickly go through some studies around anxiety as one of the components of stress. You know, there's other ways in stress, but anxiety is often one of the expressions. So in a study of second-year medical students in an MBSR program, there was a 15% decrease in medical students, and this was right before exams. So leading up to exams in med school, and because you're meditating more, your stress goes down by some self-reported scale of 15%. Compared to a control group without medication where their stress went up 20%, as you would expect, as you approach 5 years. So kind of a cool study. And then a follow-up study showed that a lot of the reductions in anxiety were maintained over a 3-year period. Not necessarily because people were practicing. 8 weeks with a lot of practice apparently does something pretty significant. So there's like templates set where even a little bit of mindfulness can actually help you stress less. But I would never encourage only a little bit of mindfulness. Always encourage a lot. And then now enough studies have been done over time. These are some of the preliminary studies. So now people are reviewing all the many studies and sort of lumping them all together. And let's see. I don't have the exact number, but this is a review study. It's basically concluding that there's big reductions in anxiety across all these studies. There was 19 studies reviewed. So I don't have the details of that. But just, you know, a big review of many, many studies. And the aggregate result is indeed mindfulness really decreases anxiety. It's not always found. So clearly, very clearly scientifically documented that mindfulness reduces stress. Now, I just want to avoid confirmation bias, which we often have in the scientific world. And there's, you know, there's not everything is shown to be helped by mindfulness. So in a review study on insomnia, 7 studies were reviewed, and only 4 studies showed that mindfulness helps with insomnia. And in those 4 studies, it really increased how well the people slept, as well as how long they slept. So it really helped in 4 studies, but not in all studies. So, insomnia is one area where there's some benefit shown to mindfulness. Another area, and this is where it starts to get a little interesting and surprising, is inflammation. And inflammation, I don't know much about this. I'm not a medical person, but apparently it's a precursor to lots of diseases. And a lot of nutritional advice now is going on eating in a way to reduce inflammation. But inflammation is known to be a stress cause thing in the body. So, and conditions that inflammation exacerbates are things like rheumatoid arthritis, asthma, irritable bowel syndrome. These are all things that have to do with inflammation of tissue. And for some reason, stress really exacerbates that. So in one study, looking at chronic inflammation, this was actually compared to a control group, so it is really, you know, as strong a study as you can get. So there was a mindfulness-based stress reduction group compared to some other kind of group, where they're getting education and they're meeting as a group, which is what happens in mindfulness-based stress reduction. It's not just mindfulness, you meet as a group, talk about things, you get group support. So maybe it's the group that's reducing stress and inflammation. But in this study, the mindfulness-based stress reduction group was shown to be much more significant in reducing inflammation than the control group. So it really probably very likely is mindfulness. So again, are there any doctors in or nutrition, someone who can really say a little more about inflammation and health? Anyway, it's just a really big one. It's the cause of a lot of stuff. Okay, so we'll just keep going here. Type 2 diabetes, a strong stress correlation with type 2 diabetes. In a very long-term study, 35 years, with more than 7,500 subjects. People experiencing chronic stress had a 45% greater chance of type 2 diabetes than those who didn't. So they separated those out. So that's diabetes, so inflammation, diabetes, immune-related issues. This was a really interesting study that everything to do with immune depression, you know, is causing a lot of immune suppression, is going to cause a lot of health problems, right? So from common colds all the way up to HIV positive. This is a study on HIV positive patients. So a mindfulness, I think it was mindfulness-based stress reduction group, some kind of mindfulness group, compared to, let's see if there's a control group. Yes, there is a control group, I forget. So CD4 T cells are brains of the immune system, and they kind of coordinate the immune system when there's something to attack. And they get really weakened with HIV positive. And so in the mindfulness group, again, probably an 8-week period, those cells didn't decline at all, while the control group declined quite a bit. Again, why? Well, probably because the stress response was cut, and that stopped suppressing the immune system. And we all know this just in our own experience, right? When you're really stressed and you're working too hard or something's going on, you get susceptible, right? To getting sick, to getting a cold. But imagine this, you know, going all the way out to affecting you if you're HIV positive. More research, pregnancy and childbirth, that women in pregnancy who practice mindfulness end up feeling happier and more relaxed and less stressed, and they have better birth outcomes. And I don't have all the details here of what that actually means. But less complications with childbirth, less postpartum depression. So on and on it goes. Tons of research helping so many things. So if you want to stress less, meditate more. If you want to live longer, I could probably say meditate more. If you want better health, meditate.